Everybody has something to share. And if it's shared from your level of experience, from a pure and authentic place, and from a place of humility and a place of transparency, it is powerful, you know, across the board.
That's Julie Pyatt. And this is another Ask Me Anything episode of the Rich Roll Podcast.
The Rich Roll Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. I am Rich Roll. I am your host. Back at you for a second episode this week, our second week in a row of doing two episodes a week. And I'm joined today by my lovely co-author and wife, mother of my children. How's it going?
It's going good.
That's Thanks. Julie. That's Julie Pyatt, if you're new to the podcast.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for inviting me back on Rich Roll.
Do you know what the mission is here?
I kind of do.
You want to give it a shot of articulating the mission of the podcast?
What you do here at Rich Roll Podcast, at the Rich Roll Podcast, is you inspire people to find and discover and live their most authentic versions of themselves. And how do you do that? You do that by having the best and the brightest, most groundbreaking, thought-provoking, heart-inspiring guests that you can find on the planet to uplift and inspire and lead us all into the depths of our hearts.
I like that. You should do the intro every week. It's the mission. The mission is to help you live and be better. So each week I sit down with the best and the brightest across all categories of life, health, and excellence to blow the ceiling off your personal potential.
And you're doing it for us, and thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you for saying that. And thank you to you guys, the listeners, for subscribing to the show on iTunes. We appreciate that. The whole iTunes thing is funky, like how that works with the rankings and everything. Sometimes I'm number one, and sometimes I'm number 20. I don't know how that works. I think it has to do with... It's not just the number of people that have listened to the episode. It has to do with new subscribers, and it also has to do with reviews. So if you guys out there have an extra second, go to the iTunes page and give us a review. That helps us out a lot.
Give us a very good review. That would help us out. A 5-star review.
That would be preferred, but I'm not here to tell anybody what they should do. Also, thank you for spreading the word about the show to your friends, to your colleagues. On social media, I always love the Instagram posts of people enjoying the podcast out in the wild, you know, on their bike or at work or in the car or what have you. And thanks for subscribing to my newsletter. I send out those updates every week as well as product deals, and I'm going to start doing more with the newsletter soon. And also, thank you for clicking through the Amazon banner ad at richroll.com for your Amazon purchases. That actually helps us out quite a bit. And it's pretty cool that so many people have bookmarked that and they use it every time they go to Amazon. They make sure that we get credit for that. It doesn't cost the consumer anything extra. It comes out of Amazon's pocket, and that helps us keep this little train chugging along the tracks.
That's right.
So thank you.
Thank you.
So you're writing a bunch of blog posts right now that are going to be going out.
I am.
On what
am
kind of subject matters?
I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
Food.
Sharing some of the recipes.
Yeah, sharing some of the recipes. Also talking about, how to handle cooking for meat eaters. Mm-hmm. Meat eaters in your family, in your extended family.
Cooking for them, or also how to kind of engage them verbally and emotionally.
This exact post was really just, you know, three amazing recipes that will please the meat eaters in your life. So yeah, some of it goes off. Yeah. And some of the other, the other emotional and kind of energetic things you can do, like, you know, how to show up in a group of meat eaters. Mm-hmm. And another one is, why you should make time, to cook, mm-hmm. why everybody should make time. And also, what are the benefits of showing up around the family table mm-hmm. as a matter of habit or part of your lifestyle, stuff like that. And I also just featured some amazing whole foods that I think just get left. You know, we're always looking at how to prepare things, but I just did a post that just features, you know, some whole foods and brings them front and center and just sort of reminding us that nature gives us a lot of things already, you know, perfectly created, and we don't need to mess with them. Mm-hmm. So I did.
But those posts haven't been published yet.
No, they're
not
published.
People that are listening, right?
Yeah,
like
you'll find.
No,
you'll see
to go
them
right now. So they're going to start rolling out.
That's right.
Soon, and, we'll
and I have more. I have a lot of writing to do, so I'm feeling that pressure.
How has this whole book process been for you?
It's been pretty amazing. You know, it's been. You know, I'm sort of again. It's like for me, I'm sort of. I'm just. This is my first book. So I'm more in a beginning place with it. So, but it's been amazing, you know, it's been amazing to, I mean, I think I'm on the brink of it. It's just sort of starting for me. Mm-hmm.
People are always asking me or are interested in how we collaborated over it. Like, I think they want to know if we got into big fights or something.
Yeah, we did. Totally did. Broke up. No, we didn't really.
No.
No,
I mean, it was pretty evenly divided. Like, it was kind of natural, like, what you would be mostly focusing on versus what I was going to be mostly focusing on. So we were able to kind of, I mean, and we would swap pages.
So we weren't fighting over,
yeah,
I want my peanut butter cookie recipe in the book.
Well, obviously, you know, the actual recipe aspect of it is your domain. Like,
yeah.
I made sure that was your, you know, that you had full control over all of that with, you know, I had some input, but that was really your thing. And I was more focusing on the editorial content, which we split up between both of us. I mean, there's opinion pieces by me and opinion pieces on you. And it has this kind of really nice yin-yang kind of thing to it because we both offer complementary but sort of different perspectives on issues. So,
well, I would say, I mean, in our family, I'm the chef and you're the, you know, you're more the nutrition expert, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I do. What's interesting about our relationship is that we came to this lifestyle through two very different lenses. So, you know, I came to it originally through healing myself of a cyst in my neck. And then that went deeper into the aspects of energetics and Ayurveda and meditation and frequency for me. And you came into it also through a health scare, but then you were focused on performance, like athletic performance.
What if it was the other way around and like you became the ultra athlete and then I was like the yoga dude?
Well, I'm...
and you were like going to Ultraman. What
no,
would that look...
I think half of that is happening. You are becoming the yoga dude.
Yeah, and I kind of am.
I'm holding that vision for you. So that will be the full actualization as you come through this athleticism. And then, you know, you'll be the guy with the orange robes and the beard.
I am like, you know, like I when I was at the... U.S. Olympic Training Center, giving my talk to the young swimmers, you know, I was getting up and talking to them about mindfulness and yoga and how that can have a positive impact on their performance. And I put a slide up that was a picture of me in a lotus position, you know, and I'm thinking, Julie's really the one who should be talking about this, not me. You know, I'm just like the front man for the wisdom that really is coming from you on that. And then the other irony is that you know, I did a podcast interview with Andy Puddicombe, who's the founder and co-CEO, I think, of Headspace, which is a meditation app that I talk a lot about and I'm always supporting and kind of telling people they should check it out. I have no business affiliation with them whatsoever. I just think it's a helpful tool. Andy was a great, amazing guest, and I'm going to be posting that interview soon. But I also they have their own podcast called Headspace Radio, and I did that one. And now they've like put me as one of their, like they're doing like a kind of month on fitness and wellness. And so I'm one of their, you know, sort of fitness experts, mm-hmm. like in their blog and on their podcast and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And that's another thing that's ironic because I feel like that's more your domain. I mean, I love it and I can speak to it. And, you know, I certainly have reaped the benefits of that practice, but I think you're much further along down the line than I am in that regard by a country mile.
Well, I mean, you know, I think in life, you know, oftentimes you teach what you need to learn, you need to embody. I mean, and, you know, I kind of giggle at myself also because I had a moment in my life where, you know, I wanted to sing since I was 6 years old and then I didn't do it for my whole life. But I did have a moment where my brother, who's this genius musician, Stuart Mathis, who plays for the Wallflowers, and Lucinda, his wife, Holly, at the time, just called me up and was like, hey, will you be in my band? And I was like, hey, I'm not a musician. And she was like, yeah, hey, you are. So I just show up at rehearsal. So for a split second, I was in her band for like three performances, and I was terrified. I'd never sang on a mic. I'd never even spoken into a mic before. And from that, those three events, it was only three shows, because then we didn't do it anymore because Stuart got some tour and he was gone and that was over. But I had photographs from that moment in my life, really awesome photographs of me singing, me on stage singing. And I had them up in my house and they sat there for 10 or 15 years until I had my awakening with music and became a musician. So I always kind of, like when I see that picture of you meditating that's in the book, for instance, and you know, you're new to meditation. You're very new to meditation. You're just beginning to sit, and you know, and I mean, if you look at it in the vast, you know, the vast scheme of thing, I'm very new to meditation, you know, honestly. So even though I've been doing it for, you know, 20 years, so it's all perfect. It's like, you know, of course you should be teaching that, and of course you should be embodying that. Mm-hmm. And I look at that and I go, let that be a sign of what is coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't look at that picture of you in the book and go, that should be me meditating. That's not what I think. I look at it and go, wow, let that be a sign of what is coming in his evolution. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
What is coming?
Well, I don't know. Only you know.
I don't know.
No, I hope. I mean, I hope that, you know, I hope if it fulfills you and if it touches you and if you find meaning in it and value in it, that you continue to explore meditation and to explore the deeper, more expanded spiritual aspects of yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I would wish that for every human being.
Yeah, that's the plan. You know, that's I've embarked on that. Quite imperfectly, but at least, you know, the ship is pulled out of the dock, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, that's a good place for me to ask you, you know, what do you think what is your hope and aspiration for this book? Like, what is it, like, if you could have your way with, you know, it's gone out into the world and it's doing its thing. Like, how do you, you know, what is your vision for that?
Well, I mean, you know, from a very deep part of the creation of it is, you know, I understand what a gift and what a blessing it is to feed people, and that how much nurturing and power and transformation and love is inherent in the food that we eat and in the sacred rite or ritual of actually serving food. And, you know, anybody that's been over to our house, you know, they come in, and, you know, they're embraced with a lot of creativity, a lot of sharing, a lot of openness. You know, our space is very open. It's open to nature. So there's beautiful design. There's music. There's open energy, a welcoming energy. And then there's a lot of amazing tasting food. and, you know, it's chaotic. It's not all neat and pretty. You know, it's a family of seven, you know, that are all artists and all existing and all creating, and things aren't always in place. Like if I had one, you know, one sort of thing in the back of myself that bugs me once in a while is I wish I had sort of an extra aspect of me that could put things in order a little bit better when somebody comes in. But when somebody comes into our house, they really get the essence of us if they come and spend an afternoon with us. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is what we have shared through the book. It's almost like we've invited the reader into our home, and we've allowed them to experience a slice of our life with us, you know, through the lifestyle, through it being shot, you know, mostly at our home in the area, the land that where we love, you know, where we live. And I feel like it's sort of like we've prepared a seat at our family table and we've said, come on in and join us, because obviously we don't have the physical capacity to invite people all over the world into our home. But we've really done it with this book. And so if I had a core desire is I just hope that the book inspires, touches something deep inside someone else that inspires them, whether it's creatively, spiritually, athletically, like in the kitchen with food. I just hope that it inspires something that's really pure and authentic within each one of you, and that from our example of living our life, that you can find a starting point to jump off into your own expression that will carry you way beyond what we've experienced, or in a different way, in your own unique way. But mm-hmm. that would be my deepest dream for the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like, well, I hope that you can make a pie a little bit more delicious.
No, but you will.
You will, but
you'll actually make really some really delicious pies. But
yeah, so I think it's that's the heart and the core of the book, right? Yes, it's filled with all of these, delicious recipes and beautiful photography of the food, but it's really, on some level, I feel like it transcends that, because it's not, as much as it is about that, it's not about that.
No. It's about a lifestyle. It's about showing that these aspects of food and these principles and these energies, these ideas that we live with and that we cultivate within our lives, they permeate out into all areas of your life. And, nothing's perfect. Nobody's perfect. It's a process. We call it an evolution revolution. That's what it is. It's a moving, changing, living organism. And that is what each being, that's the life of each human being, mm-hmm. And so, it's a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
The Plant Power Way.
Yeah, okay. I want to, that was beautifully said, and I couldn't have said that better, for sure. I mean, look, we're super proud of this book. We can't wait to share it. And, we're in the thick of it right now, like trying to do all this media stuff and get the word out about it. So we just, it's on our brains, and we wanted to share that with you. So thank you for that. And for people that haven't pre-ordered it yet, or maybe you're new to the show, we're offering $300,000 worth of pre-order bonus gift incentives for everybody who pre-orders the book prior to April 28th, which is the day it goes on sale. All kinds of cool stuff. Like, you'll get 9 bonus recipes that are not in the book. You'll get all these discount codes, including like 20. If you pre-order one book, you get 20% off an Omega juicer. And those are like amazing masticating juicers that are anywhere from like $230 all the way up to like $450. So 20% off, that's significant savings. As it ramps up into, you buy 3 books, you buy 5 books, you buy 10 books, that discount code goes up to like 40%, and with all these other added extra awesome bonuses. So, again, it's our way of saying thank you. And it's cool to be able to say, hey, for, the $28 that you're going to spend at barnesandnoble.com or IndieBound or Amazon to pick up the book, you're going to get all this other stuff that's worth way more than $28, plus you get the book. So anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's some good stuff.
It's cool. Yeah.
There's
so
a lot of really good
stuff.
Anyway,
just go to richroll.com. The green band that shows up across the top of the page will direct you to the page that has all the information on how you can participate in all of that. So, okay, well, why don't we take some questions from the listeners?
Yeah, let's get into
it. Would you like to do that? It's been
a
while since we've done the Q&A thing.
Let's do it.
Right? So I went through some of them, and I found a couple good ones, and I thought a good one to kick it off with is one from Lars Tandrup. And he writes as follows. Your discussions about mindfulness and that you are not your thoughts can create your own reality have resonated very well with me. I sometimes look back at my life and wish I had known or paid attention to that earlier in my life. My daughter is 15 and in high school, and I think she and other young adults could benefit tremendously from learning and thinking about some of these concepts. I see the pressure they are being exposed to in terms of selecting college, tests, finding out who they really are, peer pressure, exposure to drugs, alcohol, etc. But I'm unsure how to approach the subject with her. Do you have any experience with good ways of discussing these concepts with teenagers?
Hmm.
So I thought that was a pretty good question.
That's
for
good
you.
Good question. Hi, Lars. Thanks so much for your question. You want me to take this?
Yeah, for sure.
So, okay, so she's already 15, so she's already in sort of this, teenager stage of her life. I have found the most powerful thing for teenagers is to get them into a yoga class. So whether, I don't know what kind of relationship you have with her. I don't know if you could go with her to a yoga class or if that would be frightening to her. She would want to go alone. But there are some versions of yoga that are out there that are being taught to music, to kind of popular music. And I found with teenagers that teaching them to a playlist that they like is an amazing tool. And it actually, the physical yoga practice will start to do the transformation on her. Mm-hmm. And it's very enjoyable. It will release endorphins. It will make her feel good. It just really, really is nurturing to the body. And then I would say, after that, you could explore, you know, doing some meditations together. I don't know how open she is. So, you know, maybe she's very worldly and she's very open to, you know, other ways of doing things. I would also suggest my meditation program, which is Jai Release, on the Ritual site. It's a 30-minute guided meditation that she can put on her iPad and put, you know, headphones on and, you know, experience a pretty complete 30-minute meditation. So those are two ideas that I have.
Yeah, I think that's a wise approach as opposed to let's sit down and have a talk and I'm going to preach to you about the benefits of you know, it's not going to work,
right?
She's
not going to hear that.
I think the other thing would be to figure out like, well, who is she into? Like who does she sort of respond to in terms of, you know, popular culture, pop culture figures out there and who among those people is into something like that? Like, for example, like Russell Brand, he's all about mindfulness and meditation. He talks about this stuff a lot, and he has the ability to connect with younger people in a way that, you know, a lot of other people can't. So I'm not saying Russell Brand is the person that your daughter should tune into, but maybe there's somebody that's more on her wavelength that she can hear the message from.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
I mean, in our case, you know, our boys are 20 and 18, and they're all about this kind of stuff. But it was different in the sense that it wasn't like they reached 15 and decided to have that it was time to deal with this. They just grew up with it because you're their mom.
Yeah. And I mean, they went in and out. Like I have a visual actually going to one of these kind of high energy rock and roll yoga classes. And they would sometimes come with me to class and hang off my body. I had two little kind of babies mm-hmm. hanging off the front and the back. And then they went through different phases. They went through phases where they weren't into it at all. And I wouldn't say that they're not ultra flexible, yogi types. However, they are, you know, they're very into yoga. Yoga is a part of their life and we meditate together and they meditate without me. And, you know, I told them the other day, actually in the car, I said, I know you guys be okay because I know you have yoga. So it's not that life isn't going to present difficulties. It is because that's how life is designed. Mm-hmm. But I feel like they're good because they have tools. They have meditation practice and they have yoga practice that they can do no matter where they are. And they do turn to it in times of stress, in times of, you know, where they're feeling, you know, just some transformation going on. I would also say a really amazing thing you could do for your daughter is find, you know, the best yoga center in town and buy her a month series. Mm-hmm. And agree to drop her off. Just say, I'm gifting you this. Anytime you want to go, I'll take you. And I'll drop you or whatever. That's what I would do.
That's great. And then she can kind of take ownership of it herself as opposed to you telling her this or that.
Yeah, that's right. And then the other thing, Lars, is I would get her Autobiography of a Yogi if she likes to read. It's a very amazing book, a classic yoga text, and it's a story, and a lot of young people enjoy reading that, and people of all ages, but check it out.
Timothy Sheaf was over at the house a couple weeks ago to do another podcast. I just love that guy. He's the parkour artist ninja dude that can, you know, do handstands on the top of the Brooklyn Bridge and stuff like that. He's just an extraordinary individual. And he's kind of really like he has evolved since the first time that we sat down with him.
He didn't even look the same.
He looks totally different. Mm-hmm. Now he's got long hair and his interests are shifting and he's expanding and it's pretty cool to see. And he's really starting to get into meditation and yoga in a way that he wasn't the first time he came over. I mean, I think you could see him dancing around these ideas and it's not surprising that he's moved towards it, but it's different now. Like he's like all in a way that he wasn't before. And he was looking for some books to read. So we gave him our copy of Autobiography of a Yogi, which I've read like three times, and it's all dog-eared and, you know, the pages are all bent in it and stuff like that. And he's digging it. Like mm-hmm. he's tweeted about it, like he's quoting from it in his Twitter feed, and he emailed and just said how grateful he was to have been gifted that book because he's really getting a lot out of it.
That's so cool. Well, he was asking me sort of second and third questions. It took me a minute and he was like, are there any physical practices in this book? And then I said, wait a second. And I went up and I got a book that is, it's by the Bihar School of Yoga and it's Swami Satchitananda and Saraswati. And it's like the original very, very classical asana book. And so I gave it to him and it had actually been signed by his successor. So it was signed by Narasimha. And I said, this is a very sacred book, but it's perfect that I gave it to him because he's the master of physicality.
Right.
You know, so I hope
that Who else would you give it to?
Who else would I? Probably no one. I would have never, yeah. I would have never given it to anybody, but
right.
Yeah, it's really cool. So cool. Great.
Yeah. And I don't know when I'm posting that interview with Timothy, but probably in the next couple weeks or something like
that. And I have to say, it was a little bit hard for me to give him that Autobiography of a Yogi copy because it's our copy that we had when we were living in the teepees. And I was like, I look at that and I can see the teepees when we were building our home. And but anyway,
but I think
it was good to give it to
all
him.
The more beautiful
Absolutely.
That we gave it to
yeah,
him.
Yeah, it was.
All right, let's move on to another
thanks,
question.
Lars. Good luck with that.
Thanks. So this is from Michelle Rhodes, and she asks, my question has to do with my kids who are 17 and 14 and who play national soccer and lacrosse respectively. How do I modify their plant-based diet to be sure that they are getting the proper nutrients to fuel their explosive sprint-based sports? So,
sure.
Yeah, so we have some experience with this. Trapper, our 18-year-old, played varsity soccer this year, and now our 11-year-old Mathis is playing hockey, which is an interesting thing. I would have not predicted that I would have become a hockey dad, but that's what's happening. And so, yeah, so, you know, they're plant-based, and you know, as all our kids are. So the question has to do with what you would change to make sure that they're getting everything that they need. And my answer to that really is not much. You know, I don't think that you have to really do anything that different. I think that the main thing is that, you know, their caloric needs are going to be a little bit higher. So portion sizes are probably going to be bigger. But if you're feeding them, you know, basically, you know, whole plant-based foods prepared, you know, pretty close to their natural state, that, you know, nature will rig it for you to make sure that, you know, they're getting what they need. But to the extent that you're looking for kind of tips for just making sure or being able to sleep better at night, you know, plant-based foods that are higher in protein, making sure that maybe you up the percentage of things like lentils, mung beans, quinoa, and always making sure they're getting their greens. You know, if you're eating a plant-based diet, but you're not getting your greens in every day, I think that you're missing out. They're so dense in phytonutrients and micronutrients. So I think that's important. I think, you know, pre-practice, you know, for them to have a green smoothie with kale and, you know, maybe put some beets in there, which really help with athletic performance in a training context. They help with the uptake of oxygen and carrying it through your bloodstream to your muscles. So, you know, adding a little beet in there is great. And, but, you know, I think it's you don't have to overcomplicate it. You know, their carbohydrate needs are probably going to be higher. So sweet potatoes or, you know, the potato salad that's in our cookbook are probably good. I mean, what are some of the things that Trapper, who's 18 and is in this category, prefers? Like, what are his favorite dishes that you make for him or that you're always trying to make sure that he gets so that he feels good before and after his practices?
Well, I mean, he just eats a lot of food. I mean, he eats, you know, good portions and good quality food, stays away from processed foods, you know, packaged foods. Don't be eating vegan junk food and think that that's, you know, a good thing. So right. I would stay away from gluten for inflammation across the board, whether you think you're gluten insensitive or not. And coconut water, definitely introduce coconut water to replenish the system. Using small amounts of turmeric root, just hide it in the smoothie or sprinkle it in a soup or a stew. That's really good for reducing inflammation. Another one of my favorites is hemp seeds. Make sure that they get hemp seeds and chia seeds, either.
High in omega-3s, and hemp seeds are also high in protein.
In protein.
As well.
So you can sprinkle those in a morning porridge, you know, some kind of, you know, really oatmeal has a gluten in it, but it's very, very low. So it could be some oatmeal mixed with some chia seeds and some hemp seeds. Get some walnuts in there, or some, even goji berries. My 7-year-old loves goji berries, which is great. So those are some things you can do. And the other thing that I would also add in, especially if there's an energy, you know, a little energy concern, put a half a teaspoon of a good quality spirulina into either the oatmeal. That'll be more intense because they'll see the green, and they, you know, depends on the kid, you know, what it is. But you could put it into the smoothie or even just dissolve it in water and drink it. I find that to be extremely energizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes I'll take like half a tablespoon of spirulina, put it in water with lemon, and just drink it, you know, which is intense maybe for somebody who's new to this, but it makes me feel great, actually.
That's really good. Also bananas, I think. Did I say bananas, like for cramping?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's kind of a myth now.
It is.
Actually,
okay,
there's this idea that like that bananas have all this potassium, but they're actually not that
high
in potassium.
It's a myth now?
Yeah, I know. Isn't that interesting? There's other foods
you
that
ate
are
a lot
in
of bananas.
I think that the thing that you butt up against, and we've experienced this, is when you go to the games or the practices, and the, you know, there's always one parent. It's their week to bring the snacks or the food or whatever. And, you know, 99.99% of the time, it's just the worst stuff ever. Like, it's just pizza or just garbage, you know, just garbage food. And then there's a lot of candy bars and sports bars and sugary drinks and the Gatorades and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, trying to, you know, find healthier alternatives for that, for your child, can sometimes be tricky, especially when they're on a team and they want to be doing what their other kids are doing, and there's a little bit of peer pressure involved. But, you know, coconut water, bananas, dates, things like that are, you know, actually much more effective and obviously much more nutritious than most of that kind of stuff.
Well, and I took fruit smoothies, too. I was snack mom for Mathis's hockey game this week, and I took fruit smoothies. And I was shocked that half of the kids refused them.
Right. Like, what was in the fruit smoothie?
It was
like,
just
it wasn't
like
green, right?
No, I made like sure. I was like, don't. I was like, I better roll in mellow, right? Uh-huh. So I just roll. And I also had some gluten-free vegan cupcakes from our bakery, from Carmen Baker, but which are not, I cannot say that they're health food. You know, they're just not. But I brought some of those little mini ones, and then I brought the smoothies. But it's interesting. Yeah, I kept the green out, and even as is, you know.
So it was like banana, strawberry,
basically,
or like that.
Maybe some chia.
And it just freaked some of the kids out.
Yeah, and then half were really, really excited, and half the parents were really excited. And so I think we made a difference, you know. But, you know, half were like, you know, I'm not touching that.
Right.
It's the microbes. You know, literally their microbes are like, you know, start to freak out. So you just have to stand there and just, and you know, just be neutral and just, you know. Right. So I said, oh, I'll volunteer to come again. So let me know if you want me to do it another time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, for me, in an athletic context and making sure that like I'm kind of getting what I need, you know, it just has to be hearty. You know, it has to like stick to the bones. I can't eat like just some light meal after a huge workout. Like I need something that has some heft to it, like, you know, a giant bowl of chili or some of that adzuki bean pasta, you know, with your plant-based fettuccine sauce or, you know, lentils. You know, lentils are actually great for that if you mix in veggies and other things like that. So
yeah, and I mean the other thing that we have
about portions
in the cookbook coming up, and there's a whole section is it's our one bowls, and you know there are periods of our life that those are just coming out of our kitchen all the time, so they're pretty close to a macrobiotic type of eating. So it's a sautéed green with you know a quinoa or a rice or a millet. And then maybe a baked yam or some sautéed bananas or some fresh avocado with a sauce, some kind of sauce, whether it's gluten-free tamari. Mm-hmm. It could be a ginger glaze with, you know, some fresh ginger root and fresh turmeric. Or it could be just like a cashew cheese sauce with some nutritional yeast in it, which has a lot of B vitamins. And make sure also that you guys are getting B12. Make sure you're taking a B12 supplement and incorporating nutritional yeast into your diet as much as possible.
Next one. This one is from Wade. What's up, Wade? Wade asks, I would love some tips and lessons you have learned along the way of your podcasting journey so I can get off to a good start. This guy's looking to start a podcast focusing on vegans in business and providing business tips for vegan entrepreneurs. All right. Well, awesome, man. Very cool. Some, you know, things that I've learned along the way. I think the first thing is, I don't know. You know, it's not like I had it all planned out and when I decided to do it. Like, we just started it, you know, and it's kind of gone on its own journey. But I think the most important thing that I've learned has nothing to do with what kind of mic you're using or what your audio setup is or, you know, all of that kind of technical stuff. You'll learn how to do that the way that works for you as you go along. The most important thing to me is, you know, what are you doing that no one else is doing? Like, what is your sort of, you know, place in the marketplace? Like, what kind of content are you going to be putting out that, you know, isn't already readily available or being done by somebody else? So I think that's the first thing. Like, not that it has to be contrived, but I think that you have to say, oh, you know, I'm interested in this subject matter and I couldn't find it anywhere. So that's a niche that could be filled. So I think that's important. And then the second thing is, if you're going to be doing an interview show, I mean, the most important thing that I've learned over the 140 episodes of doing this is that what's much more important to me is the most important thing to me is having an authentic exchange and experience with the person that I'm talking to. And that trumps everything else. That trumps the information, that trumps the questions, it trumps the answers. For me, it has to feel like we connected, and through that dance that occurs, something genuine was expressed. So the information must be subservient to that. And so that means that you have to be prepared for your interviews, but then you have to be willing to throw that script out and just be present with what's happening and guide it, but let it guide you as well. So what I found is that when I'm a guest on a lot of shows, the person has come to the interview with their list of questions, and they're much more interested in making sure they get through all their questions than they are in what your response to those questions is, right? So in an interview, like kind of interviewing 101 is, your next question is always built into the response that the person is giving to you. And if you're listening, you'll always know what your next question is if you're really listening. But if you're not listening and you're looking at your list of questions, what happens is the question gets asked, I'll answer the question, and then there's a pause and the person says, awesome. And then they ask the next question on the list. And to me, that's fine. I get it. But to me, that's not a dance. I feel like it's a missed opportunity, right? It's not really a conversation. It's kind of a one-way street as opposed to this spherical, you know, kind of organic living thing that has its own, you know, life and kind of, you know, place that it wants to go.
Right.
So that's my biggest advice.
Well, I think that's really profound advice. And I think that the way that you just expressed that, you know, is like a commentary on how the podcast for you has become a meditation and mindfulness, actually. So you're actually open. You have an idea of where you're going, but you're open to be in the moment. What you're looking for is the energetic connection. And to the amount of success, or what you're calling success, is tied to your ability to be present in the moment with the person you're connecting to. That's meditation.
Sorry, I didn't hear anything you just said. I was thinking about something else.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the difference. And, I mean, well, the way that Rich does podcasts and, you know, prefers to, and sometimes he makes, you know, an exception to this, is that you're looking for the one-on-one sitting in the room with the person. So you're not doing a bunch of Skype interviews, which makes it very rough if you don't have a big network.
I've broken my rule and done Skype interviews from time to time with varying levels of success. But, you know, all things being equal, like, you know, I always require that it's an in-person thing, because that's what it's about for me. And it doesn't matter how compelling the person is on Skype, you're not getting the best version of what it would be if you were actually staring them in the face while it's happening. It's just different, you know, and that's what I'm looking for. That's much more important to me than you know, making sure that that a certain kind of kernel of information is expressed. And that's different from other people. Like, you know, and I don't have any judgment on it one way or the other. That's just the way that I prefer to do it. And that's what I found that I'm good at. And so, you know, because I don't know, you know, that's what I try to do to distinguish what I'm doing from what other people are doing. And sometimes that makes it tricky because they're, you know, if I did Skype interviews, then I would have access to a lot more people and I could put up more episodes and, you know, I could get people on more timely with what they're doing, and, you know, it would just be a very different animal. So I realized that it takes me longer to get to certain people that I want to interview because we have to be in the same place and all of that kind of stuff. So it puts it on more of a slow burn kind of thing. And, you know, I'm at peace with that. I'm fine with that. But to this guy's question, Wade's question, I mean, I think I would really, you know, sit down and write out, like, what is it that you want to do? Look at what other people are doing in the related space. How is yours going to be different? Why should somebody tune in to listen to you as opposed to the alternative? And try to come up with something unique and different. And, you know, I think it's great. You know, I love the podcasting medium. I love the fact that it's having this moment right now, this kind of moment where it's never been more popular, which is so ironic because it's kind of the, you know, the original form of media back to, you
free
know,
radio.
Yeah, like radio. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that, you know, people are out there starting podcasts left and right. So good luck to you. Cool. So let's move on. Carson Gross has a question. What are some first steps that a person can take to begin sharing things they've learned? For me, this relates mostly to nutrition and running. How can I start helping others discover these things that have helped me so much in my life? So I think you could take that. It doesn't matter that it's about running or whatever it is. It's just this idea of taking something that you're interested in and you're passionate about and kind of, you know, flipping the switch and getting into kind of service or this, you know, more of a, you know, teacher or mentor or, you know, kind of role.
I mean, I think one of the key things that we all have to go through in our evolution, in the trajectory of becoming ourselves and returning home to who we really are is you know, sort of a process of learning and unfolding and discovery. And I really feel like the only place that you can share from is from personal experience, right? Because that's all we all have. And what I would sort of raise a little caution or a little awareness to take a look at, to make sure that you're not running a program of, you know, I want to help people before you've hit a certain level of actualization in your own development. So, you know, I can speak to, you know, Rich and I had this you know, this vision of the Plant Power Way. It was called Jai Lifestyle, and it was, you know, existed 12 years ago when we first got our land, and we had, you know, a website, and we were doing yoga retreats in Italy and design, and we had a tribe community, you know, where we would gather, we would have events, all this type of stuff. And on the surface, it was all seemingly really good stuff that we were trying to develop. And the truth of the matter is both of us had a lot of transformation that we needed to go through before we could really serve in service. So I would, you know, I don't know you, so I don't know where you are in your journey. So I would just say again, the only place you can start is within yourself, and it must be very personal. So if what you're looking for is an authentic path to service, and then by doing that and by going deeper into yourself and into your own process and sharing that as authentically and transparently as possible, your life will then provide you certain transformational experiences. Some will be extremely challenging and you might be questioning your choices, and you know, some will be beautiful and expansive. You know, it will be the whole box. So that's, you know, that's what I think. And I also would say that we all have to be very, very mindful in the fact that we're moving in a world where, you know, you're required to make money. You know, there's a business kind of world running, and then it's your own spiritual evolution. So how do we bridge those two things? Mm-hmm. And I think it's very, very crucial to be very careful that you are not projecting your energy in any way via products, via opinions, via judgments on other people, telling them that this is the way they should do it, because that is not balanced energy. Mm-hmm. So the only thing you can do is share from your experience with no manipulation and no like coercion or wanting for anybody to be like you, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is a very transparent process. And I feel like if you stay within those boundaries and you're just like, I'm sharing from my heart and this is what happened to me, you can stay clear of certain karmic trappings that will trip you up if you, you know, get in the illusion that you know the way for someone else and you're going to show them how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's wise. I would add a little bit of a caveat to that. I mean, there's some sense in your response that, you know, it's important to make sure that you're kind of well down your path of learning and knowledge and whatever it is that you want to share. And I think that, I mean, that's always evolving and progressing and continuing. There's no destination to that. I think that, you know, if you have gained some experience, that there is always value in sharing that, as long as you're sharing it, as Julie said, in the context of your own experience, as opposed to some kind of, you know, lecture-based approach. In recovery, they say, you know, like people come in, you know, they get sober, they put together a couple days, maybe a couple weeks, and they really don't know anything about recovery. But somehow they've managed to stay sober for however short period of time that is. And there's a sense, you know, with most of these people, like, well, I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't have anything. You know, there's no way that I can help anyone because I still don't know what I'm doing. But that person has had an experience that somebody who walks through the door who's on their first day of sobriety has not yet experienced. And so there's value and wisdom that person can then share with that newcomer, that maybe that newcomer will be able to receive, because that person is going to be able to relate to the person who only has a couple weeks of sobriety, because the person who has 10 years, that just, they can't connect with that emotionally, right? So there is, you know, this idea that, like, let's say you put it in the running context, like somebody just ran their first 5K. They lost a bunch of weight. They ran their first 5K. They did it very slowly. Now, this person is not an expert on running, is not necessarily an expert on anything, but they were able to accomplish something. And I think to be able to share that experience to somebody else who has not yet run a 5K and is intimidated by that has value.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, completely, 100% agree. And yes, everybody has something to share from where they are in their journey. I guess I was speaking a little bit more to the tendency in some of us to you know, get a little bit of experience and then think that we need to go out and save the world, which in fact we need to start right at home within our own selves. And by starting at home and focusing at home and looking at yourself, you can then be a much greater healer, teacher, leader, you know, by that. But yes, there is, you know, everybody has something to share. And if it's shared from your level of experience, from a pure and authentic place, and from a place of humility and a place of transparency, it is powerful, you know, across the board.
All right, let's move on to a different question. This one is going to be for Julie. It's from Jen Robinson. Rich often talks about the difficulties that men face as they enter or walk the path of wellness and are perceived to be less masculine. Can you please talk about the difficulties or unique gender experiences that women face along this path? I mean,
Hi, Jen.
Do you have thoughts on that?
Ask me the question again.
Can you talk about the difficulties or unique gender experiences that women face along this path? So is there something inherent to being a female that creates some kind of unique experience about you being, you know, plant-based? Or, you know, I don't know.
Not really. Yeah, I'm not really feeling that. Let me see if I can feel into what she's asking.
What do we
asking.
Say? We got to leave Jen with something.
Jen, we got to give you something. I'm trying to feel in. Well, let's see. No, I mean, usually there's not, because it's not in this world, it's not, you know, it's not viewed wimpy, you know, to then embrace a plant-based diet. You know, it's like, you know, she's the alternative yoga hippie girl. So maybe that would be it. I mean, I would say one case where I could share this experience is when I was faced with a golf ball size cyst that showed up in my neck rather quickly. And I went to, you know, doctors to get it checked out and had an MRI and everything. And when I decided that I was going to treat it naturally through the use of, you know, plant medicine and Ayurveda, I was marginalized by the doctors. I was, you know, patted on the head. I was also marginalized by Rich Roll, who's looking at me right now from behind the mic.
Yeah, he didn't tell me. The part that you left out is that every specialist said that it was never going to go away short of surgery. Mm-hmm. And that was just a fact, you know, and this was a long time ago and I had a different perspective on things. So yeah, I was concerned. I was like, the doctors are telling you, like, they've told you, you can't do this. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I would say probably now I'm getting more to the core. Thanks, Jen. Now I'm getting more to the core of what the question is for me. And that is that because I have chosen a wellness lifestyle and because I know that there is power in the plants and that they carry an energetic communication and resonance, which actually restored my body to a perfect balance as it was created, to heal itself, I am often marginalized by a lot of people, or that is their opinion to me. Is, you know, she's the hippie chick, or, you know, isn't that weird that she thinks that way? And, you know, when in fact I have concrete experience that I healed myself of a massive cyst in my neck, which I don't know, you know, that many other people that have had the courage to actually go down that road and face my, you know, face themselves in that way. So that's probably the biggest challenge of me being me in this world. And I've had to, you know, practice a lot of compassion and neutrality. And also, I would say maybe one of my biggest wounds is other people feeling me to be so different from them, because I don't feel a difference between me and anybody. So I'm always the last to know. I sort of had this kind of childlikeness about me where, you know, I can be in a group and just not feel any separation. And then when I leave the group, they're like, whoa, she was really strange.
Yeah, I've witnessed that firsthand, by the way, where we'll be in a group of people and you'll start sharing some, you know, perspective that you don't realize in your mind.
I don't.
Like, I have a pretty acute ability to kind of survey a room and kind of know where everyone's coming from. Like, I can kind of intuit that or empathize with everybody's perspective. And I'm probably too sensitive to that. I have this like people pleasing thing. And I think that's how I was able to develop that awareness. Whereas you don't really care. You're just like, hey man, I'm here and here's what I think. And then like, you'll like lay something out and I'm like very aware, like, whoa, this is like
oh no, she did
but
it
you're,
again.
But you're like, yeah, but you're not aware that that's how it's landing. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we've had conversations where I was like, yeah, you might want to dial that back
dial
a little
that
bit
in
next
a little
time.
Bit.
And you're like, what do you mean?
Well, I can't, you know, again, it's like, you know, the journey for me is just being who I am. That's all I can be. You know, it's kind of between me. And so I think that that's been challenging. But, you know, I also know that, I know that there's wisdom in this way. And so I have to take refuge in knowing that even if somebody thinks I'm a little weird or I'm a little off base, something I say, something I offer, maybe one little morsel of that is something that they take with them or sticks with them, and maybe it inspires them and maybe it doesn't, and it's all okay.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Jen loves your music and she'd like to hear more of it. And she wants to know if you're planning on writing your own memoir.
Oh, Jen, thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you for listening to my music. It's just been one of the dearest, dearest expressions of my life. And I always greatly appreciate it when people take the time to listen to my music. It's created with my boys over 7 years as we became musicians together. And I still pinch myself that I even got to experience that mm-hmm. while I'm alive. Yes, I am writing my own memoir. As a matter of fact, I wrote, I had over 500 pages done. And I was writing it in a sort of in a perspective of a homeschool movement, and that has now been put on hold. So I now have a new timeline. I have an agent, and I have a new structure, and I am actually diving back into that. So, yes, I am writing my own memoir, and thank you for asking. And I hope to connect with you down the path. Thanks, Jen.
Cool. All right. This one's from Lisa Manchi. And she wants to talk about being plant-based on a budget. I mean, basically, she's saying, eating plant-based has become easier and fun for our family, but I continue to struggle with our purchases of other items and the high price tag that can sometimes come with those purchases. I constantly am in an internal struggle when I go shopping because I haven't done enough research or any at all. And I'm not sure what went into the process of making all of our belongings or if I'm paying twice as much for nothing. I don't want to drive myself crazy worrying about this, but I would love to learn how to keep making conscious decisions to be ethical when it comes to providing our family with all the extras. I worry about everything from the next pair of running shoes I need to our shampoo. Can you help navigate the right road to living more ethically and putting the fun back into shopping? So this is great question that I think brings up a lot of different things. I mean, we could talk about food and how to, you know, shop plant-based more economically, which is certainly something that everybody is interested in. And then how do you kind of extend that awareness into the other consumer choices that you're making? You know, this podcast has really been an exploration and expanding that awareness that we're bringing to food to other things. Like we had Joshua Ketcher on and we're learning about how our clothes are made, where they're coming from, and you know, when you talk to the food babe, you learn about, or, you know, with her and other people, like, you know, some of the things that are going into our foods and, you know, how to be more aware of that. And Gene Bauer said something interesting when I interviewed him, which is that, you know, all of this is really, you know, when it comes to being, you know, making more conscious consumer choices, it's an aspiration. You know, we all live in this world, right? If you drive in a car or you ride in an airplane, like nobody is going to be perfect. Like we all are leaving some kind of footprint behind, and we can't, you know, walk this path without living in a, you know, a cave in complete isolation without, you know, having some kind of impact. So it's about trying to be better and being more aware, but also understanding that you're not going to do it perfect. And, you know, you've got to make peace with that, I think, on some level, because otherwise you're going to make yourself insane.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it's an evolution revolution. So it's always moving. It's a process. Everybody's in their own space at their own time. I do think that the key place to focus on this is with your food, because it's the most important aspect. With what you're putting in your mouth is affecting the planet at large. So I would share with you that, you know, I share a little bit of your pain, although I know without a doubt, with complete resolve, that our food, the quality of the food that is in our home, is the number one most important expense in our life. So we spend a lot on food, and I feel really good about it. And you know, I had some friends over a couple weeks ago, and you know, one of them said to me, well, isn't this kind of eating really expensive? And sort of just spontaneously out of my mouth came, it's not as expensive as cancer. And everybody kind of stopped. They were like, whoa. They were like, you should, you know, write that. That should be a blog post or something. And I didn't mean to say it, so I didn't have any energy behind it, but it just came out of my mouth. And that is really the truth. That's, and it doesn't have to be cancer. But the point is that it is the most important thing you could be spending money on. So I don't think you should feel badly about making sure that you have the best ingredients that you can find at the most, you know, the best prices that you can find. Of course, be mindful, buy online, you know, buy local, you know, go to Trader Joe's, get a subscription to Thrive Market, you know.
Thrive Market is a great cost savings right there. I mean, Thrive Market is basically an online Whole Foods that our friend Gunnar started. I think it's just thrivemarket.com. And we're actually offering free memberships and discount codes with the pre-order campaign for our book. When you pre-order our book, you get a free membership. And essentially, they have so many of the products that you would ordinarily buy at Whole Foods, but at like something like 20 to 40% cheaper. And of course, it gets shipped to you, right? But that's a great way right there to start exploring increasing the nutritional quality of your foods without breaking your bank or trying to do it more on in a budget-conscious way.
Right. So you can do that, or you can, you know, buy in bulk, you know, through Amazon. Or, you know, I have a bunch of mason jars in my pantry, and you know, just get your
nuts.com.
Nuts.com. Like, get your self established with the foundation that you need, and then fill in with the farmer's market as you go. And then with the other stuff, I would say, yeah, we all have a footprint. So we all have to keep looking at our lives. How can we change that footprint? Then maybe the focus goes to your cleaning products. Like, what are you using in your house? You know, what chemicals are you using in your house that are there? So you can move, you know, to a little bit different awareness there.
Shampoo, toothpaste, laundry detergent, cleaners, soap detergent.
Right. All that kind of stuff that's around your house. And then, you know, start looking at your clothes, where are your clothes made? You know, I think the one place that a lot of vegans are very challenged is with, you know, leather products, with shoes. You know, just because there is not as many, you know, resources as there are for other things. But what I would tell you, the other thing that I do a lot is I shop vintage. I buy vintage clothes and shoes so that at least, you know, it's not causing new harm. You know, the harm's already there and I can use it and repurpose it. So I'm a big advocate of shopping in vintage stores using, you know, things that have already been used. And then I would say, though, that it sounds to me like you're having a little bit of a struggle, which is creating a little bit of, you know, violence within your own being. And what I mean, this is like resistance, like unease, like you feel uneasy about everything that you're doing. And you certainly do not want to live your life like that. So you have to get to a place where you make the best decision that you can in the moment, and then you let it go. You know, you're not going to be perfect. You're not going to get the list and be right to the letter down the line. So it's going to be a process. So allow yourself the process and focus on the things that you did that made a difference. And don't focus on the things that, you know, aren't in the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's wise. Good. All right, let's do one more. This one is from Alex Buell, and Alex asks, let's see. I have been noticing something interesting lately. Whenever I eat some meals, my stomach has been saying, stop, you're full, before I would normally be full. This person is embarking on the plant-based way of eating. Have you guys run into this? The problem is I feel as though I should be eating more, but my body is saying no. I can't decide if this is my body's response to adequate nutrient uptake or to an adverse reaction to a certain food. It's so funny and ironic because most people are looking to, they would just love to be full eating something healthy, but they're like, I can't get full doing that. So I eat lousy foods. And then suddenly this person is like eating healthy and is freaking out because it's making Alex full. And that's disconcerting. I would say it's doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. I mean, I think that, look, without knowing, you know, specifics about you and what you were doing before, I can't make like some kind of crazy medical diagnosis. But I would say, I would imagine that what is happening is you have increased the nutrient density in your food, which means that the foods you are eating are much higher in micronutrients and phytonutrients and minerals and vitamins and all of those sorts of things. And those are the things that, you know, your body really needs. When you're eating the standard American diet, you're eating a very high-calorie diet, but you're not eating a very nutrient-dense diet, right? So you can get fat while also starving yourself because your body really needs those nutrients in order to function properly. So now you're giving your body that, and the body's saying, thank you, I don't need any more. I have what I need. And that is alarming, you know? I think the other thing, too, is volumetrics, and this is what Chef AJ talks about all the time, which is if you eat, you know, a tablespoon of oil, that has a certain number of calories and you're not going to be full. And the equal amount of calories would in vegetables would fill your entire stomach and make you full, right? So mm-hmm. when you're eating plant-based foods, there's so much fiber and all of that, and it tends to, you know, fill you up. Mm-hmm. And it will be lower in calories, but higher in nutritional quality. And I think that that is, you know, a good path to be on.
Mm-hmm. And I have one thing to add. I think that it is immensely powerful that you are getting a message from your body and that you can hear it. So that right there is a huge, huge, huge evolution. I would say listen to your body always and do not listen to your mind. So your body is telling you that it's full and then your mind is coming back like, wait, something might be wrong. Just listen to your body. Your body knows. Your body will guide you into eating and living the way that is right for you.
I think that's a nice place to end it for today.
Okay. Thanks for, yeah, beautiful.
Anything else you want to say? Did we do it?
I think we did it.
Cool. Well, thanks for taking this little journey with us today, everybody. That was awesome. We're going to be doing, we're doing another one of these next week. Right?
That's right. I'll be back.
So she'll be back next week. So keep sending us your Q&A questions. Send them to info@richroll.com. And we'll see you back here with Julie next week. For all the information, education, products, tools, resources, and inspiration you need to take your health, wellness, fitness, and self-actualization to the next level, where do you think you go for that?
Richroll.com.
There you go. Garments, products, nutritional products, educational products. And also, if you're into online courses, go to mindbodygreen.com. We got two up there. The Ultimate Guide to Plant-Based Nutrition, which Julie and I did together. It's about 3.5 hours of streaming video content broken into 5 to 10 minute chunks. Takes you through everything you need to know to get more plant-powered. But if you want the recipes, you got to get the plant-powered way. And then I have a course called The Art of Living with Purpose, which is basically about goal setting, about the internal work required to unlock your best self. That's about, I think it's about 2.5 hours of streaming video on that one. There's an online community. It's all pretty cool stuff. So check that out at mindbodygreen.com. If you're digging the podcast, take a minute to give us a review on iTunes. Pick up the free app to listen to episodes older than the most recent 50 and keep telling your friends. Keep using the Amazon banner ad at richroll.com. Keep Instagramming and we will see you back here pretty soon. You want to take us out?
Peace. Plants.
You're like laughing when you did that. Peace. What?
No, you're supposed to say namaste.
Oh, I am? Oh, now I do that?
Yeah,
all right. Should we do it again?
Okay,
do it again.
We'll try it. Ready?
Ready, go.
Peace. Plants.
Namaste.
It's been a long, hard road down the line. I've lost the truest part of who I am. How much can one man take? Nothing seems to stick. get in.